I think I probably mentioned this before from this place, but I've said it before in lots of other places. So if you've heard me say it, you're going to hear me say it again. It seems like it's really hard to get a straight answer out of politicians. Have you ever noticed that? Like, you can't ask a politician a yes or no question. You might think it's hard to get a straight answer out of a preacher in the same way, right? Yes or no. And it seems not to happen. And we've got one of those interesting political exchanges in this biblical text for this morning. We have some disciples of the Pharisees and some supporters of King Herod who come to Jesus at the behest of the Pharisees to ask a question. Jesus perceives that they're trying to trap him. So the question that they ask is a very, very difficult question with lots and lots of aspects and facets. Jesus' answer turns their difficult question on them and places a difficult question at their feet. At first, it seems like a pretty straightforward question. Is it or is it not lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? That sounds pretty straightforward. Yes or no? Yes, it is lawful. No, it is not lawful. But we've got to unpack that question, not just a little bit, but a lot. Indeed, someone has come from the Pharisees. The Pharisees' disciples and supporters of Herod have also come. And so when the question, is it lawful, is being asked, is it lawful doesn't only ask, does it fit with Roman law to do this? It also asks, does it fit with our Jewish heritage and teaching around what it means to be a called and gathered people of God? This wasn't just a political question. It was also a religious question. And indeed, as we'll discuss today, all political questions are questions for people of faith. All faith questions have political implications. So that's the first piece. Is it lawful? Then the next piece has to do with taxes and with Caesar. What are the taxes for? Are they being administered fairly? How are they being levied and collected? And then Caesar. What authority does Caesar have? How long has he had it? Where did he get it? Who says so? How is it enforced? You see that one question has lots and lots of facets and aspects to it. Jesus doesn't like that they come to him, lets them know that they seem like hypocrites to him, and he asks to see the coin in which the tax might be paid. They present a coin to him. He asks a seemingly simple question. Whose image and titles on this coin? Caesar's, they say. And then Jesus gives what might seem like a simple answer. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and give to God what is God's. It might be easy to say, oh, well, Caesar's stuff was on the coin, so Jesus must be saying, yeah, you give the coins to Caesar, and then there's other God stuff that I'll tell you about later that you're supposed to give to God. That would be a wonderful way to think about this, except for one thing. We know what those coins had on them. So let's take a look, shall we? Imagine that you're in my seminary classroom. This is what you would get for your time. The first of all is Roman coins with both implicit and explicit iconographic messages of power and dominance permeated all levels of society. That's just my classroom way of saying there were coins all around, and they had images on them, and they wanted you to think about certain things in certain ways. That's true about our coins too, right? Our coins are always telling stories and are always propagandizing a little bit, aren't they? When I was a kid, I was a coin collector, right? What is that, a numismaticist or something like that? To me, it was a coin collector. I was 9 years old and I would go to the local flea market and I would barter for coins. And I would go to the bank and I would get rolls and rolls of dimes and nickels and pennies. And I was always looking for what? When I was looking for pennies, I was looking for the wheatback pennies. right? Those pre-1910 pennies. I was also looking for steel pennies, those World War II pennies, right? Like 1942 or something. I was also always looking for Buffalo nickels. Those were the really old ones. Mercury dimes, right? And then when I had a little bit more money and a little bit more experience, I started looking for half and full silver dollars, walking liberty and standing liberty. But all of those symbols on all of those coins made political statements. Even the words on the coins made political statements. If you saw e pluribus unum on a coin, right, from many, one, a political statement, either an aspirational political statement, this is how we hope we can be as a country, or perhaps a propagandist political statement. This is how we want ourselves to think about who we are as a country. And then after a while, we start to see in God we trust on the coins as well. So the language and imagery of our own coins also has many aspects and facets. Well, let's go ahead and take a look at some of these Roman coins. What kind of a thing would they have handed to Jesus when he asked the question? So here's the first one I want to show you, and I'm going to kind of go in time order, right? So the first one is this. This is, I believe, the reverse, rather, so the backside, the tails side of a coin. And what you can see here is the goddess Roma. And you can see that she's reclining upon, it's seven hills, one of them she's on, and so you can't see it, and one of them she's in front of. But the seven hills of Rome, Rome is said to have been founded by the goddess Roma, right? And then by these two twins, Romulus and Remus, who were raised by a she-wolf. But the goddess Roma, she is the divine patroness of Rome. So one of the things that we knew was floating around on Roman coins in Jesus' time and before and after is a claim for divinity and divine connectedness to Rome. So it could be that when Jesus said, look, let's see what's on these coins, one of the things that he saw was a claim for divinity by someone other than the God of Israel. So tuck that away and be thinking about it. Let's look at another coin, shall we? Here's another one, and this coin has a picture of a human being on it, and it says here that this is not only just some human being, that this is Caesar. This is an early Caesar, and what we have here is Caesar's head. Whose image? Caesar's image. And on the back, we have this wonderful star with its eight rays, and we've got something else there. It says, Divus Julius, the divine Julius. Whose head is on that? Caesar. Whose inscription or title? Caesar's. What's the inscription or title? Julius the God. Now you're Jewish and you go to the teacher and he says, let me see the coin. And I'll ask you, how much of this can you give to Caesar? Well, I see something on the back of there that doesn't belong to Caesar. Julius the God, it says. I guess you just scrape that off and you give that part to God. And then you give the rest of the coin. Do you see what we're starting to see here? A little bit of a problem. Jesus tested them right back. And if we believe the reverse of this coin, that Julius is a god, now we've got a problem with the obverse of the coin because you're not supposed to make any graven images of God. If Julius really is God, now you've broken another law. No other gods before me. Oops. No graven images. Uh-oh. We got a problem. We got a coin collecting problem here. Let's go ahead and look at another one just for fun. Ah, Caesar Augustus. Now, this is Julius Caesar's nephew and heir, Augustus. Octavius, who took the name Augustus, which means majestic one. And what this coin has on it is the image of Augustus and the title Son of God. Son of God. Because, of course, Julius was a god. Augustus now, his adopted heir, is Son of God. Now, which part of this coin do you give to Caesar and which part do you give to God? You're going to let Caesar have Son of God? You're going to let Caesar have graven image? You're going to let Caesar have the majestic one? Oh, my. Oh, my. This coin purse is problematic, isn't it? Let's look at another one. Uh-oh. No Son of God here. This one says that Augustus, Caesar's son and heir, is full on God now. Divus Augustus. Imagine Jesus, a teacher of the Jewish law, looking at this coin and saying, oh, okay. Tell you what, take this puppy down the road, and whatever stuff of this is stuff that belongs to God, give it to God. And whatever stuff on this truly belongs to Caesar, give to Caesar. The majestic one, I'd say that belongs to God. God, I'd say that belongs to God. That's okay. We're getting somewhere. Let's take a look at another one. Ah, here's another one. This is Tiberius. Tiberius would have been the emperor, the Caesar, during the time of Jesus' life. Maybe while this conversation was going on, it would have been Tiberius. Here's Tiberius Denarius, and it says this: Tiberius Caesar, worshipful son of the god Augustus. Worshipful son of God, majestic one. What on that belongs to Caesar and what on that belongs to God? You can't see it very well, but on this one, on your right, we've got a reclining figure here and on a throne. And then we've got some words on the outside. Do you know what the words are? We have pontiff. It's an abbreviation of pontificus. And over here we've got maxim, an abbreviation of maximus, which means high priest. Caesar was known not only as imperator, supreme ruler and sovereign, Caesar, Augustus, but also often as high priest. Basically, Caesar said this and said it through all of the coins. I'm the high priest. I'm the one who sits on the throne. I'm the King of Kings. I'm the Lord of Lords. I'm a God, and I'm the Son of a God. Can you imagine Jesus holding this coin, this blasphemous coin that says all of these things about Caesar, and looking at those folks and saying, you hypocrites. Go ahead. Give the Caesar part to Caesar and give the God part to God. The problem is Caesar had taken all of the God stuff and tried to ascribe it to himself. Let's take a look at another one just for giggles. Ah, here we go. Here's one. Germanicus. What else have we got on here? Caesar, imperator. Yes. Now we can add conqueror. Germanicus was a name that was given to one of Caesar's sons. Why? Because he led the battle in which the Germans were conquered. So he took the name of those people so that every time anybody worshipped him, they had to do it in the name of the people that he had conquered. In essence, he was saying with that title, I rule over the nations. That's the Caesar claim. Except if you're of the Christian faith, except if you look to one God, the creator and ruler of the entire universe, God is the ruler of the nations. Well, this coin's got a mess on it. We also see that it was approved politically. The SC lets us know that the Senate was behind the minting of this coin. Let's take a look at another one, please. This one I got so excited about, you can see I drew on it in the classroom. This one lets us know that Caesar is the sovereign. It lets us know that Caesar is majestic. It lets us know that Caesar is in charge. It tells us that Caesar is divine, and it gives Caesar's name. This is the Caesar after Jesus' death and resurrection. This is Vespasian. Vespasian was involved in the destroying of Jerusalem, so that by the time the people were reading the Gospel of Matthew, these coins would have been circulating, and they would have had to ask the same questions about that. In fact, on the reverse of this coin, we've got something very interesting. It says Judea Capta. This is a commemorative coin reminding everybody of how Caesar took the Judeans captive, killed their families, burned down their temple, destroyed their city. That's what this coin commemorates. The people who wrote and read the Gospel of Matthew would have seen these coins in their daily life. And as they heard this story about Jesus, they could have, if they were lucky, had some of these coins in their lives. What do we have? We have a Roman conqueror standing by a palm tree, and we have a defeated woman bending over and sitting down. She represents Judea, God's people, defeated, destroyed by Caesar. What's the God part of that? What's the Caesar part of that? We have any more? Let's see if there's one more coin. I don't know. Oh, goodness. Yes, there is another one. Sometimes, even if you're Caesar's mom or sister or wife, you get to be a god too. So this is Diva Augusta. We have male god on one side and female goddess on the other side. If you're part of the royal family, if you're connected in Rome, you get to be god. You sick of coin collecting yet? You seen enough? I think I've shown you enough to make my point. My point is this, that the answer to a convoluted and difficult question is always a convoluted and difficult answer, but it's a question that requires answering. Jesus did not say, "That's a difficult political question. I'm not going to answer it." He did give an answer that would have caused his listeners to take seriously the problem. The problem is Caesar was claiming all kinds of God stuff, and the entire system was guilty of being complicit with that. Maybe you've heard people chanting sometime in the last months or years, "The whole damn system is guilty as hell." This is kind of what Jesus was saying when he said, "Show me the coin." And then when he said, "Oh, divide up. Give Caesar what's Caesar's and give God what is God's." He was saying, "We got a systemic problem here, folks. The very question rests on very shaky ground. How in the world can you give tax with the coin like that to Caesar and leave God out of the equation," is what Jesus is saying. In fact, Jesus is saying, "I wish Caesar had left God out of the equation. I wish Caesar would quit calling himself God. I wish Rome would stop calling itself divinely founded and inspired. I wish Caesar would quit calling himself Son of God. I wish Caesar would quit saying he's the high priest. I wish he would quit claiming God's sovereignty and majesty." Jesus answered a political question with a very political answer. What he was saying to them, and I think what he's saying to us, is this. Every time you ask questions about your allegiance to a tax system, or to a governmental system, or to a local municipality, or to a nation, or to a leader, you have to ask yourself, am I ascribing to those people and those things stuff that I should be ascribing to God? In Jesus' time, people were mixing it up and getting it wrong, and Jesus wanted them to know that. Don't call Caesar God, he's not. Don't call Rome the only divine leader of all the nations. They are not. Don't call Caesar Son of God. He's not. Don't make graven images of Caesar and show him as divine. He's not. separate them out and give God what God is due and give Caesar what Caesar is due. Now, if you've been sitting here wondering two things, one is, when can this be over, please? And the other is, do I get out of paying the IRS or don't I? Here are the answers. It's almost over. You'll be fine. The other answer is, this is and isn't an IRS question. It's an everyday citizenship question, though. When you leave this room today, you're going to go into a world that makes divine claims about just about everything except for God. You're going to be asked to worship your country. If you don't believe me, just go through a week and ask, am I being asked to give the kinds of faithfulness and worship that I should be giving to God to my country this week? In fact, the Supreme Court said decades ago that when we use God language in our prayers and our pledges, in our civil life, they said, this doesn't really mean anything. It's not really God talk. It's just God stuff we say about the United States of America, so you can't take it seriously as religion, except that it seems like we do. Jesus would say, separate the God stuff out from the country stuff. Here's what Jesus wanted us to know about God. And I know this because he says it again and again and again in the Gospels. He wants us to know that indeed the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the whole earth, is God's. That God has created and God loves every single person on the face of the earth. And that when some of those people try to oppress other of those people, God comes on the side of the oppressed. We just don't have stories in the Bible where somebody is on purpose picking on poor people or oppressing them, and God gangs up with the wealthy and rich and powerful and helps to oppress poor people. If there's ever a time when somebody who's rich and wealthy and powerful thinks God is on their side, the story always flips by the end. It always turns ugly. And nobody gets to have God's titles. Nobody gets to claim to be God. Nobody gets to claim to be the arbiter of forgiveness. Nobody gets to say that somebody's better than somebody else. So when Jesus took that coin, coins that would have looked just like these that I've shown you, he saw a systemic problem, and his answer was, the whole damn system is guilty as hell. You know very well you can't separate the God stuff out from the Caesar stuff on that coin. It is so intermingled, you just can't do it. Well, that's either a non-answer or a really hard answer. If it's a non-answer, we could say, well, Jesus, you're nuts. There's nothing we can do, so I'm either going to pay my taxes or not pay my taxes and take my chances. Or, and this is what I believe, option B, it's a really hard answer. What he was saying is, we got bigger problems than taxes, ladies and gentlemen. We got to look at everything we do and all the images that we look at, what we worship and say we worship, and we've got to start to separate it out and ask ourselves hard questions. Are nationalistic images God? They can't be by divine law. They can't be for Jews and Christians and Muslims. They can't. Because all of those faiths honor the Torah that says that can't happen. Can we make divine claims for nationalistic structures? No, we can't. No, we can't. Are we called each and every day to ask ourselves, what would it mean to be on the side of the God who creates, redeems, and sustains the universe, even in the midst of a political system and situation that makes it difficult because it has entangled all of these images and claims? It means it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. The coin controversy, the tax controversy, came before Jesus and was retold by his followers generations later in the midst of a time when a nation was trying to demand allegiance for only itself and only its leader. You saw it again and again and again and again. Rome is divine, Caesar is divine. Rome is divine, Caesar is divine. Jesus wouldn't stand for it and said, give God God's things. Give Caesar Caesar's things. And you got to sort them out. Today, we got to sort it out too. We got to ask ourselves when we make decisions, whose side are we on? There will be moments when the side of God and the side of civic religion of the United States of America won't be the same side. Now, God willing, hopefully there will be some days when you feel like they're the same side. Those will be the good days. But there will be days when they don't match up. Now, I've traveled and lived in lots of different places around the world, and I can tell you something. We have an opportunity here in the United States of America that not everybody has. And we've got to fight like crazy to keep it, and that's this opportunity. If we see that our national life does not match up with what God intends and who God is, in the United States of America, we have the right to speak up or stand up or talk down or sit down or do whatever we want to make a claim about that. Who gave us that right? Outlaw rebels gave us that right. Tea party founders, people who stole tea from somebody's ship and threw it in the harbor. I only know this because I went to sixth grade, by the way, so this is no seminary learning. This came from Mrs. Zhang in Kewaunee, Illinois. And we clapped when Miss Zhang told us the story. Children, you are free to protest in the United States of America. You are free to say whatever you believe because rebels came out at night with torches and stopped business and threw tea in the water. Don't ever forget that, children. Those commies can't do that. Miss Zhang was teaching me in the 1970s. I remembered that lesson. We live in a country, unlike in ancient Rome, where we do have the right to decide, is this what God would intend? And if it's not what God intends, if it doesn't honor every single person, if it's not on behalf of the poor and the oppressed, and if it doesn't realize that God is the supreme sovereign of the universe and no man, woman, child, or nation is that thing, we have the right and the duty, the obligation to speak up, to speak out about it. Because what Jesus said then is true today. If it doesn't belong to Caesar, by God, Caesar shouldn't have it. And if it is due to God, justice, righteousness, sovereignty, God had better get it. Please, as you think about this story, please know that the system is tangled and difficult, and we have to make hard decisions. But as Christians, we're asked to give our allegiance to God, and we are in the catbird seat. We have a loving and powerful God behind us and within us, and the Constitution of the United States of America makes it not only legal, but appropriate for us to call out things when they don't belong to Caesar and to stand up or sit down or kneel down for things when they should belong to God. give to Caesar what is Caesar's. But everything else, majesty, divinity, power, sovereignty, glory, and worship, give to God, the God of the universe, the God of the oppressed, Jesus God and our God. Amen. As we prepare to sing our hymn of invitation this morning, if you're here and you'd like to make a proclamation of faith in Jesus Christ, or you'd like to join this congregation in our ongoing walk following Jesus, I invite you to come forward as we sing.